The Oregon legislature convenes today for the second day of what was intended to be a one-day special session dealing with taxes and public pension reform, so ultimately revenue. Obviously, the clean and neat one-day session did not happen. The list of items to be considered is still not that long, though, so what's happening in Salem? For that, we turn to our Capitol correspondent, Chris Lehman, on the phone from Salem. Chris, thanks for joining us again.
Sure. Great to be here, Jeffrey.
We had a chance to hear your piece at the top of the hour in the news segment, and about it must have been somewhat frustrating as a reporter to try to cover the doings of the various houses of the legislature.
Well, yeah, there's always, even in a regular legislative session, there's always quite a lot of business that takes place behind closed doors. It sort of was magnified yesterday because, I mean, you just had this really odd kind of situation of both the House and the Senate repeatedly postponing their convening time. Somebody would come out, as you heard my piece, bang the gavel, and they'd, you know, say, come back in half an hour. And, you know, it was the same thing at the committee level as well. So it was a day when many people in the building, including lawmakers, including lobbyists, and, of course, including the media and the public, were left in the dark as to what was actually going on.
And, of course, Governor John Kitzhaber called the legislature into session, hoping it would be a one-day session, laying out basically what he wanted the discussion to be about. There's been much talk of the grand bargain. I'm not sure who applied that term. I suspect he didn't, because it's one that got a bit tainted in Washington, and we need not go into what's going on in Congress right now. But there is a sense that can certainly arrive at eyes like mine that Kitzhaber is a bit like a parent who's really excited about a trip, and the kids aren't necessarily.
That's an interesting analogy, because he certainly did work very hard to get buy-in from the legislative leaders. You may recall in September he had the four top legislative leaders over to the governor's mansion in Salem for, what was going to be a one-day meeting that stretched into a second and third day until they finally emerged with a deal. But those four top legislative leaders, being the House Speaker, the Senate President, and the Republican leaders in both chambers, I mean, you know, they only actually represent four votes. They, of course, have a lot of sway with members of their respective caucuses. But at the end of the day, they need to convince their members to vote for these bills. And it's not clear, it's never really been clear, that there were enough yes votes for these measures to pass.
Do you have much of a sense, Chris, for the ability of the current crop of leaders in both houses to do the whipping that is required to line up the votes? I gather it's perhaps not as strong as it was in previous sessions, but that's the view from hundreds of miles away.
Well, there's a couple of factors. First of all, in the Senate, it's Peter Courtney, the Senate President, has been there for quite a long time, including a decade as President of the Senate. So he knows a thing or two about getting the votes lined up. That being said, he has a 16-14 majority in the Senate, and part of this package is a revenue-raising bill that's kind of a euphemism for tax increase, and that requires a three-fifths vote, which means that they would need a couple of Republicans to vote along with them as well. And, of course, the Senate President has a little less sway with the Republican caucus. And over in the House, the Democrats have a wider majority, but again, they need a couple of Republicans to vote for these tax increases as well. Now, you know, you might say, well, you know, maybe the Republicans would be inclined to vote for the pension cuts and some of the other portions, but not the tax increases. And that may be true, but Governor John Kitzhaber has stated repeatedly in public that he's not going to sign these bills unless all of them pass. So there's not really a whole lot of incentive for the legislature to just pass a part of the package.
Going into the weekend, the indication was that there were essentially five bills or five subject areas to be considered?
Yeah, I would say yes. There are five bills with perhaps you might say three subject areas. And very quickly, the subject areas really have been the same ones mostly that have been under discussion as part of this quote-unquote grand bargain. Now that term, by the way, we think originated with a lobbyist earlier in the session, and it kind of took off. But anyhow, the subject areas are public pensions, often referred to by the acronym PERS, Public Employee Retirement System. And this would trim cost of living increases for retired public employees, and it would also make a few relatively minor changes, like removing lawmakers from the PERS system. That's more of a symbolic thing. There's also a tax package that includes some tax hikes. That's more achieved by sort of eliminating some of the exemptions and deductions that upper income earners, we're talking the six-figure range, can take on their taxes. There is a tax hike on the corporations that are currently in the topmost area, and there's a limit to the number of medical deductions that seniors with higher incomes can take. There's also a 10-cent increase in the cigarette tax on a pack of cigarettes. So it's a real hodgepodge of things. It's quite likely that any given Oregonian might not actually directly pay any of those taxes. If you don't smoke and you earn less than six figures, then you're probably not going to pay more taxes in this package. There's also some tax breaks, some for the lowest income Oregonians, an expansion of something called the Earned Income Tax Credit, as well as a tax break for certain businesses. The Republicans have been calling it a small business tax cut because obviously that sounds pretty nice, but some skeptics have described some of these businesses. They're not necessarily a small business, but it's more of an accounting thing, how they're classified. But at any rate, that's been thrown in there to get Republican votes. And the last part of this package, and stay with me because this one
sure
really doesn't sound anything like the first two. It's this preemption of local laws on agriculture. And this is kind of a wild card because it doesn't have anything to do with taxes or public pensions, but it was put in there at the request of some lawmakers who said that's the extra little incentive they need to vote for this whole package. This was a bill that failed during the regular legislative session, and it re-emerged as part of this discussion. It's basically some counties are looking at putting local measures on the ballot to ban genetically modified crops, and this bill would not let local counties do that, with one key exception, which is the Jackson County. There's already a process underway to get that on the ballot there. That one would still be permitted under this law if it were to pass, but other parts of the state could not do that.
I wonder if there are some hurt feelings in places like Lane or Multnomah counties because Jackson County got this exemption and they didn't.
Well, yes, exactly. Lane County, there's some people working to get one on in Benton County, which is, you know, the home of Corvallis and Oregon State University. And, of course, anybody who thought they might want to do it in 2 years from now would also be prevented. And that doesn't rule out the possibility of a statewide ban on genetically modified crops, but I think you could consider that to be a bit of a long shot just based on the amount of effort there's been to enact the ban on local bans, as it were.
Chris Lehman's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Capitol correspondent for Jefferson Public Radio and other news services as well. We're talking about the special session, which is now in day two of what was intended to be a one-day session. Chris, I was surprised to read that that the bills were not actually drafted, not actually written before the session convened yesterday.
Yes and no. I mean, there were a few that had emerged late last week as so-called legislative concepts, which is sort of the bill in preliminary draft form. But you're correct. Two of them were not actually written up until yesterday, and not even yesterday morning. I mean, yesterday afternoon until some of these emerged, and that was because of some of the last-minute negotiations. And those bills are likely going to be amended. That in and of itself is not unusual. It's the fact that we didn't get to see some of these bills until halfway through the day yesterday that was really having a lot of people raising their eyebrows.
Between the cuts to PERS and the potential increases in taxes then, I mean, what's the set of dollar figures being lobbed around? Is it settling on one sort of figure, or is it a broad range?
Well, it's the range is broad. If you're talking about the PERS portion of it, it's something in the neighborhood of $4 billion, which is obviously a big number, but keeping in mind that the PERS system includes state agencies, it includes school districts, local cities, and counties. And so it's not as though the state of Oregon, the state budget, will get a $4 billion shot in the arm if this passes. But it is substantial money over the long term. As far as the tax increases, They're in the range of about $200 million per budget cycle. But again, some of those are dedicated. Some of those, some of the cigarette tax money is dedicated to mental health programming. About $100 million or so is dedicated to K-12 education. And so again, it's a lot of money, but it's not that it's a quick shot in the arm for the entire state budget.
So, Chris, there's a fair amount of hold-your-nose kind of voting potentially coming up here because it seems like nobody on the Democratic side of the aisle particularly wants to be seen as voting yes to reform the PERS system further. They already did some during the regular session. And on the Republican side, they certainly don't want to be seen as voting in favor of higher taxes. Is there concern, particularly on the Republican side, that they're going to be, and this obviously has turned into a verb, they're going to be primaried if they vote in favor of, if they side with the Democrats in favor of tax increases?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think that there always is that fear, but, you know, we're at a point in the election cycle where, you know, there would be enough time for somebody to kind of jump into a race, but, you know, these guys have an entire regular session or longer if they're, you know, multi-term incumbents, you know, of a record to go on. So, you know, I don't, you know, and the thing is like, this is not, as I said earlier, if, for most Oregonians, you're not directly going to be paying more taxes. So people aren't going to be getting a higher bill in the mail or whatever. So it's going to be a little bit harder to make this have a visceral impact on people as a broad industry. You know, if you were to pass like a sales tax that everybody would pay on everything, I mean, people would notice that right away. Most people aren't going to notice this tax hike. And, you know, the Republicans would say, well, we paired this with cuts to the public pension system. You know, don't you like that? So they'll have some counter arguments to that.
It seems like in many previous special sessions, there's this real sense of like, we need to do this. Let's do this in the day and then let's get out. Obviously, they've already gone past the 1 day mark and they're in the day two. I don't know how much chance you've had to hobnob with various members of the legislature thus far today. It doesn't seem like there's a real sense of optimism. It's more of a sense of mystery.
Yeah, you could call it that. I mean, it was said going in, you know, the governor said this, the idea was that it would be a one-day special session, but there's nothing compelling lawmakers to finish their work in 1 day. The governor can call lawmakers into the building, but he can't order them to leave. So they have the right to stay here as long as they want to. I don't expect that they won't really want to stick around that long. And there's talk yesterday that some lawmakers might be peeling away today already because they have previous obligations. They are, as the saying goes, they are citizen legislators. Some of them have important work commitments. Some of them have personal commitments. And yeah, you know, they are elected to serve the public, but this was not a time that they expected to be in Salem. So they might not all be able to stick around. And then if they were a key vote that is gone, then that makes it even harder to get these bills through. So every day that goes by, there's more of a chance of votes peeling away or people just getting so irritated that they just want to vote against everything and go home.
Is there a clear schedule for today's activities then? I mean, are votes scheduled at this point?
Well, there were a few things scheduled this morning, the first of which was a committee hearing where all of these bills would sort of be amended and possibly passed out of committee. That was supposed to have started about 25 minutes ago, and then they sent out a notice saying it was pushed back until 10:30. So it's kind of echoes of yesterday already. Both chambers, the House and the Senate, are scheduled to come to the floor later this morning. I expect those will be pushed back because at the moment, at least, there's nothing for them to actually vote on because none of these bills have been passed out of committee. So whether today turns into another case of rolling delays all day long is yet to be seen. It could be this two-hour delay is just what they need to get the final I's dotted and T's crossed, but who knows? And then if we get around to 5 or 6 o'clock this afternoon with nothing actually happened, then there's going to be some tough questions for the legislative leadership of how long they want to keep trying. Because unlike in Washington, D.C., if none of these bills pass, the state of Oregon doesn't shut down. It's simply the status quo continues. That may be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your perspective. But there's nothing that, you know, makes these a must-pass in terms of keeping the state of Oregon functioning.
And even if they do pass, I mean, there's the issue that the taxes could be challenged on the ballot and PERS could be challenged in court or vice versa, I suppose.
Well, exactly, because the PERS bill that was passed earlier this year in the regular session is already being challenged in court. That's going to go before the Oregon Supreme Court. And you're exactly right. Anything they pass this time could be challenged in a number of ways. So regardless, we're not going to be done talking about this, I think, at the end of the day today.
Chris Layman, I very much appreciate you spending time with us to explain and try to untangle some of the things going on up at the legislative session, and more patience to you for writing it out. Chris Layman's our Capitol correspondent. Thanks again.
Sure, you're welcome.
All right, I want to let you know before we go here in this hour that this Wednesday, Jefferson Public Radio and Oregon Public Broadcasting join forces. OPB hired a survey on the media, and it's sitting right here in front of me. It's the State of the Media Survey. It's about what news media people in Oregon use and about their attitudes toward the media. OPB presents the findings on its talk show, Think Out Loud, live in Medford, Wednesday at noon. I'll be on that panel along with Bob Hunter from the Mail Tribune and Julie Akins from KOBI Channel 5. We'll carry Think Out Loud Wednesday only, so just this week, Wednesday at noon, here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. That'll preempt the second hour of Here and Now for tomorrow only. If you'd like to be there in person to hear about the State of the Media Survey and the discussion about it, Think Out Loud will be held at the Higher Education Center in Medford. That's the Rogue Community College, Southern Oregon University combined Higher Education Center in the meeting room on the ground floor. Otherwise, listen here, Oregon Public Broadcasting's Think Out Loud, Wednesday at noon, here on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. And that'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks so much for listening. In hour number two, we'll be talking about Ashland's road diet and the process of assessing its successes and failures. That's hour two of the Jefferson Exchange coming up here on JPR.